It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
As yet more traveling takes me and T out of the studio this week, we get to leave you with never-before-heard episode number 2 from our secret archives. In this throwback episode, T and I interview each other and share all the juicy details of our own stories and why we started the show. You're listening to TNA Talk Sex. I'm A.
Hello.
Hello.
Welcome to Pushing Boundaries with TNA.
I'm T.
And I am A. And we have a guest with us, but they're not coming on till later.
TNA,
true. So now you have us.
Yeah, it's us. Hi. Well, but this is great because being our second podcast, we're going to talk a little more about ourselves and just our own experiences.
We are.
And how we came to do what we're doing.
This is true because I feel like you kind of need to know, like, why the hell am I listening to these people and why do I care what they're saying? So, we thought it'd be good to tell you a little bit about our history. And
yeah, and while we chat about it, we're going to have our producer, Z-Man, chime in.
Yes.
Greetings. Greetings, Z.
Hey.
Hey. Yeah.
You guys, I didn't want to slow your roll at all.
No, well, cool. You know, I just thought I'd introduce you.
All right.
So hey. You're going to be, you know, popping in like that
popping
neighbor that has a key to your house, you know?
Right.
Or like, you know, our door isn't locked, so you just come on in. No metaphor intended.
Wow.
People have to knock before they come into my... Never mind. Right. Yeah. I don't let everyone in, okay?
You're a paragon of ladylike behavior.
Oh, that's good.
Yes. The in appearance, I think. And then I open my mouth. So, gosh, everything takes on that awkward sexual
awkward
innuendo. So, I think...
How was the week?
Oh, yeah, my week. It was good. I actually had not conflict with my boyfriend, my significant other, but, you know, things that we had to iron out in our relationship. I mean, it's interesting with the open dynamic. I don't think it's that different from a regular relationship in that you kind of always have to check in, and sometimes things fall apart if you don't after a while, and you have to repair those connections, you know, especially when there's separation. And I think in my specific open relationship, the biggest hurdle is our travel schedules and how, you know, so we don't have as much time together.
I don't know how you do it. I really don't know how you do it.
Well, you know, we go a while and it gets strained and then we have a fight and check in again and then go, I still love you. I love you too. And then we stay together.
That works.
Yeah. But we, you know, we have the lovers in between, which make it all a little easier.
C'est l'amour.
C'est l'amour. Ooh, you have a good accent.
C'est l'amour. Mm-hmm. You studied... you just have French lovers.
You gotta live there, yeah.
Well, Z-Man has French lovers. That's how he got good at it.
That's the best way to learn.
It's the only way to learn French. That and the wine.
It's the only way to learn any
language. I do speak French, but I was in school. I mean, I was there. I had French lovers, but not for long term.
Yeah, well, I had one that made me read the first page of Madame Bovary to her over and over until I got it right.
That's very sexy.
I had another
again!
One by the side of the Seine River, fully lecture me on everything I'd done wrong that night.
Wow.
And another one, remember, another time stopped me walking and just looked at me and said, where did you learn how to walk? You do not know how to walk.
Oh, God, like, that is awesome.
Yeah, no, because it was the 90s. I was all grunged out and was proud
Nirvana
of my ripped jeans. I like ripped everything skateboarding. One of them just looks at me and goes, why do you dress like a bum? I don't know. What else you got for me to wear, you know?
Yeah, like, what do you mean a bum?
How lucky like for you to be...
Urban cool.
To be, like, recultured. At such a young age. I mean, how many American men get that opportunity?
Well, that's one of the roles of a courtesan is the proper education of a gentleman.
Right.
That's why I was saying that what I saw for Pushing Boundaries is a salon for ladies. Because the salonnières were, it didn't matter whether they were, the greatest musicians of the era were playing in the parlor and the diplomats and the soldiers who were making the history were meeting in her front room. And often things were getting worked out there. And that's what's amazing to me about the Salonnière, because when you study these women, the great courtesans of Venice and the ones of Paris, that is the court of power and knowledge and wisdom, because they are the ones bringing the artists and the musicians and the politicians and the powerful together.
Yes, and I think contrary to what you might think, I guess there's really no way of like proving this, but based on what I've read about it and based on my own experience, I think well, back then, these women were just catering to men, and they were just there for them to be whatever play toy they wanted. But it's not like that. It's like the wives were that. Like, that was expected from the wives. But the women of the courts were, the courtesans were, they really had to be in their power, because they were creative, and had to have opinions, and they had to be viable and, like, entertaining in that way. So if they were just, you know, laying over, so to speak, and not, and just abiding by social rules and being like the good wife at home, like that's not what they wanted. So they were really very powerful, centered women, I think.
Yeah, well, power is attractive, and exactly, beauty is powerful. Yeah. And it's what's interesting is, I think American feminism is what, like, again, when we get lectured by your French dates, you're like, whoa, Simone de who? Right? Because you realize American feminism is very limited by its view of whatever patriarchy was imposed at the beginning of the 20th century.
It hasn't really moved from there.
Well, you know, it's sad because the 20th century, you know, with its labor versus management and communism for capital, it's very sort of black and white. And then the feminists have this sort of archaic idea of manhood just as badly as the patriarchs have an archaic view of them. But it's really – it's based on ignorance, because when you study the classics, all you run into are powerful men and women. And whether it's, you know, from Cleopatra on, Nefertiti and all – you know, that's who calls shots through history, as like men and women who've stepped into their power. But I think the things that make women powerful, something recently has been very difficult for our culture. I mean, the Puritan, that there is that legacy of the wars of religion in Europe and, you know, Puritanism and all that we struggle with. So I think that's why it's so bold and noble that you guys are doing this show.
Thank you. On my way over, I was listening to NPR talking about the Catholic Church right now and just how they're restructuring what they plan on teaching, because they are realizing that a lot of Catholics are not actually following a lot of the codes, especially with sex, this sorts of thing. So I don't know. I thought that was interesting.
Are they allowed to do that?
Well, no, he was saying they can't. No, so he
clearly, I'm not religious,
right? No, no, they were saying that that certainly not. The Pope cannot come out and just say, "Okay, we're gonna, you know, go left with the Catholic Church after we've been preaching."
But maybe
this
gentle.
Well, I think that's what he's doing, and he'll sort of slowly silence some of the less popular ideas.
I'm down with that.
I know. I kind of was like, all right,
I respect
that.
Yeah,
but even so, well, okay,
no,
well, no, I.
Speak.
I don't think I will. Speak, woman. I don't think I want to speak about my opinions on religion.
Okay. All right. No, that's good.
You know, I think I have some issues with the.
It came up earlier because when I was being so, T-Money had laid out for us so beautifully the doctrine of tantric enlightenment in just plain English.
No, A-baby.
Oh,
A-baby.
You're A-baby. And you're T-Money.
That's right. Hello.
Well, that actually makes more sense.
Yeah, no, it's a literal physical attribute. Yeah.
Oh,
although you can't tell with our new marketing photos.
I had totally realized I was a certain level. Actually, I so appreciate
our new marketing photos hide RT and RA, but...
And really, it's...
kind of get the idea.
The whole figure. How it moves, it's grace.
What are we talking about? Yeah, what's grace? Sorry.
Well, grace is a religious topic, and it is the way a woman moves.
Right.
And that's why when we're talking about, because the word religion meant reconnection, like ligament, legion.
Interesting.
Reconnection. So it's anything that reconnects you. Mm. And there's other, you know, ways people tell that, but I look at it as, you know, that's why sexuality has either been deeply problematic or at the essential core of a spiritual belief, like Tantra or the Kama Sutra in the East, or, you know, a lot of Taoist love magic, or in the West, you know, with Christianity and this, its struggle with love and looking at all the different ways it can be expressed.
Well, yeah, it makes total sense. I mean, it's like I see humans as multidimensional in that we're physical, that we have a physical body, an emotional body, a mental body, a spiritual body, and all these things. So you can't, if you're looking to be connected, you can't exclude anything. Mm. I think all of these things play a major role. So it makes sense, like, oh, by the way, I had a completely religious experience this morning as
Speaking
I was having
pushing
a,
boundaries.
As yeah. I was having a
boundary.
An intimate moment with myself, and this and it was like this. It was this, like I had this. Okay, I'll just come out with it. I had literally the most amazing orgasm I've ever had in my life,
come
and I
can,
I swear.
I hear these stories.
Oh, so that's why the Tantric Enlightenment came out. Just
I
bam.
Well because. I,
am I too loud?
No, I think my mind. Anyway, so, but what happened afterward, it was like what I felt afterward, it was this like ongoing, super long orgasm, but it was so, and I'm not kidding, and I have good sex, I have fucking fantastic sex, but this was like beyond, and I don't know why, I think it's because I'm just like, you know,
maturing,
in my life.
Yeah.
Well, and I think there's just I've been so creatively open, and I'm writing all this stuff, and so I'm creating a lot right now, and I feel like that has a lot to do with it. But like it's been happening where I can breathe. Like the way I breathe will arouse me and bring me to almost climax. Yeah. Where
I know somebody. I know it's an interesting problem to have. Yeah, no, it's described in some of the very classical literature. You might look into that.
Yes, I've dabbled a little bit in Tantra, but
the
I'm
very
not
person
first.
Who I'm thinking of in
well,
that
we're gonna
case.
We're going to have a guest on eventually about
yes,
that.
Yes, we will.
I met
yeah.
a lovely man in San Francisco who's a master of tantric.
Oh, anyway. Yeah. Well, there's a lot of them in the paper there around Marin County, like some better than others.
Sure.
It's interesting to sort them out.
Well, but I'm looking saying, forward we're going to okay. talk more about it. Well, there'll
so
be an
I'm
episode
forward,
to come. Continue.
Yeah, but just the idea of such a blissed out state.
Yes.
You know?
And also, but I wanted to say what happened afterward, because, like, afterward, I felt so connected to myself, like, stronger than I've ever felt. And, like, all this dramatic stuff was happening during the day, like, problems with a man and I don't know, just stuff. And but I was so centered and so clear, and I swear to God, it goes back to the orgasm.
Yeah, no, it's
a spiritual religious experience. Like it can be.
Yeah,
really.
Yeah.
Like,
oh, I agree.
Yeah, and what's interesting, it's related to your creative energy. I mean, that's the thing about the root chakra is that's from which the sexual energy in the universe. That's the yin and the yang, right? And then you have the male and the female that comes together in all biology, plant or animal. You know, and you have forces, you know, positive and negative, electromagnetic force. You have these opposites. And then, you know, that's the thing. Every now and then it comes together. And that's the experience of that moment. And it's powerfully associated, I think a lot of the Indian literature, powerfully associated with artistic expression and creative endeavor. I mean, there's that one temple, man, if you've seen the statues on it, it's super hot. The one that's always the favorite for like erotic
the
sculpture.
Indian?
I'm thinking, and I can't remember the name of the particular temple that's kind of famous in the art history books.
Right.
If you're turning to the right page, kids.
I forgot what I was going to say. Go ahead.
I don't know. No, I was
I wasn't sure if you could hear me, and I'm not hearing anything. Anyway.
Tell me more about your Tantra friends up north.
Oh, well, no, I think that what's interesting, you just said, you know, that it occasionally will all come into line. And I think the goal, at least for me, I'm interested in making it line up more often, right? To have that pure creativity in those moments of truth.
Well, I mean, that's how the universe creates everything. And so I think it shouldn't surprise us that sexuality is essentially creativity, and sensuality is where that somehow we find other ways of expressing it in the world besides just humping everything.
Yeah. I mean, ultimately, you just
sometimes. Yeah. Always. No, everything.
Yeah, it looks like you're still working on that.
I mean, ultimately, I think it's just the more unblocked you are, right? The clearer you are in various aspects, whether it's creatively or whether you need to be more firm or more like maybe you're too daydreamy and you need to be more, and there's a block of you being more responsible or practical. I think whenever, you know, you push through those boundaries within yourself and get through those blocks, you can have a religious orgasmic experience.
No, I was a successful college student, so I wasn't so distracted that I couldn't focus. But it seemed like anytime I'd go into the library, right, and you'd be sitting there studying.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and you're really yeah. focused on real work. I mean, it's almost like the sex furnace turns yeah. on. Like, why is yeah. it all that, you know, every other thought?
Because
like,
you're not supposed to no, do you, it or be thinking yeah. about
no,
it.
No, you have an, exactly, you have an intellectual epiphany, and yeah. immediately what follows is like oh. a sexual thought or like a sexual image. And it's like,
well,
it's,
that's
you know,
true. You get a rush of energy.
Intellectual sex.
You know, actually, I remember
it, analyzing sex.
It was the medical students at the science library because they really knew how everything kind of worked. You know, it's like dating a nurse. You know what
sure.
I mean? But it does. You realize what's going wrong with Western medicine, that their approach can be so mechanical.
Mm.
But it was interesting, like the, and also they had this sort of medical fascination with porn that I was just like kind of like, ooh, wow. You know,
that's kind of, so
what does that mean?
Traumatized. Well, that the traumatized.
Oh, you mean they were interested?
Like, yeah, ooh, they were more like, mechanically.
Well, or you know, I'm you know, maybe there's a couple of people in particular who biased my sample. I don't mean to generalize about a whole group of people.
Well, it fits in line though. I was pre-med. I was double majoring. I was about ready to take my MCATs before I woke up and
right. really? Decided to have yeah. more sex.
Right.
What is that? More sex in a pre-med hottie? That's impossible.
But that makes sense that, you know, I was looking down the road and some part of me knew I was going to be doomed to be some pornographic mechanical, whoa. Mechanically. No, I don't know. I know I'm referring
no, I know.
To your thing.
I
but,
had those dark dreams in science yeah. class where you're like, oh, God. You know what I mean? Like where,
yeah.
they, where you just were like, you know, like that thing with that sort of that mechanical alienation that we were talking earlier about the influence of that sort of commercial porn culture on like lovemaking, where the other day when somebody busted out a line where I was like, it was so kind of contrived. I was like,
yeah, it doesn't feel like
I was like, oh,
voice.
But what, instead of being offended, I suddenly was kind of strangely hurt because where it was coming from was what I want, thinking that's what I wanted to hear.
Right.
But mm-hmm. what it was because where she had learned was thinking what boys want is
right.
what she's seen in the dark corners of the internet.
Right.
So not
right.
like that I'm sure it's tastefully
well,
done
it's,
somewhere. I can't pay that much money. You know?
I feel it's a script that yeah. we at a young age start learning. And I think it can be very limiting to your own creative development in how you want to express yourself sexually.
Yeah, and literally just finding your voice, because it's like,
right.
well, it's like anything. It's a program, right? Like we get these programs that we grow up with from society and culture, and then you have to break through them and find your own
sure.
voice in every aspect. And it's
but
like
I'll
that.
Say this. Can I? Ever since I read this article talking about our word choice during sex, it sort of sometimes will, in my head, be, you know, here I am having this sexual experience, and then I'm thinking about, am I going to say something authentic, or is this a soundbite that I learned?
Analyzing it? Like,
yes,
over-analyzing
yes,
it?
Analyzing, like what I'm going to say.
Is this genuine, or is this coming from some pre-programmed idea of sex that I have?
Yes, that's going through my
yeah.
head.
No, yeah. I hear you. I hear
and
you.
Then,
yeah.
And then I have to say that, you know, I have found that I will use the F word a lot. But fuck, we can say, right? So I'll say fuck during sex,
it's the
right?
internet. You can say whatever you
sure.
want.
Yes. But so...
This
so
is good to know.
that will come out, you know? I find that I lean on that, you know? Whereas I have maybe friends that will express certain curse words, like, you know, they say shit or, you know, what things come out. And it's like, you know, is that learned? I don't know. But I did have a boyfriend once tell me that his experience of my use of the word fuck seemed more authentic than someone that he had been with before, where he felt like she was using it to turn him on or using it to, because that's what he wanted to hear. And he's
right.
like, well, it's not what I want to hear. I want you to actually be excited.
To be connected
right.
to it.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, and I guess that what happens is you received all this pre-programmed material from whatever literature you read about how a knight behaves with a lady or whatever, and then you try that out, and it either works or doesn't, you know, and then you adapt because she either lectures you over the cafe table in Paris or what, however that happens. Right?
Aw,
yeah.
see.
But I, yeah.
Oh, I wanted to share, I had my experience with a Frenchman where it wasn't even sexual, but rather I had very large suitcases and I couldn't...
He took exception to your taste in luggage.
Yeah.
Yeah, typical.
I couldn't. French. No, yes, exactly. But I actually couldn't pick one of them up. It was too heavy. Oh. And long story about why I decided this was a good idea. I was supposed to live there for a year. Uh-huh. And And he said, "Would you like me to help you with your suitcase? Would you like me to help you with your suitcases?" And I said, "Yeah, well, I mean, you know, if you have time, I don't want to pressure you if you're comfortable with it." And he goes, "I need you to stop being American and tell me what you want." And I said, "Yes." And I
said, "How many times have I heard that?"
That is awesome.
And I said, "Yes, carry my suitcase."
The thing is, how bourgeois for him to have to ask. You know, he should either have a man doing it or be on it.
That's true. Why did
I'm
he
surprised
ask?
That he asked.
Because he has
because
no...
Because most of the time they don't.
Well,
no, and the
know,
French ask.
Bam.
No, not
Italians
when I'm there.
Don't. When the Italians
nope.
don't.
I've been there multiple times. I've never...
It depends.
No.
The thing
right, well,
is,
we
this
can
is
debate
what the
culture.
Euros will get on. Yeah. It depends about his class. Hands down, it's what his mama beat into him.
Right.
Or if somebody else was around to beat something else into him.
But I think... But I...
Well, but even American... Look, people complain, say, oh, Americans don't do this. Plenty of American men hold doors open for me, carry a bag.
Yeah.
I mean, all these things.
Yeah.
I had to tell my French boyfriend, I would say, I'd say, you know, I'd be like, yes, you have to carry this. I'm dragging.
But here's the thing. I just think, like, it's so common for people to be dragging suitcases around in Europe.
Yeah,
you
is.
Know, in the metros and stuff that, like, they don't think, like, if they stopped to help everybody, it would just...
Well, I remember once in Italy,
you know, yeah, the New York
it's too much.
Right,
I think
yeah.
I hadn't even picked it up yet, and this guy just as he was walking by, just picked it
yes,
up.
Yes, I've seen
walking.
That. I've seen
and
that.
And I sort of had a moment of startled. Yeah, and then I was like, oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
And
I cared the porter.
I love that. I'm
no,
all about chivalry.
Just,
I,
just a man. Just
oh, all right.
A, yeah,
and
no,
he didn't
no,
take off with it, like
no,
running?
No, exactly. Well, I thought
just,
maybe he'd have to run
whatever.
No, he assertively said, I'm helping you with your bag.
I love that.
Oh, all right.
Yeah, so I could imagine what he'd be like.
As you were imagining. Like, trying to keep up with
I wonder, yes. How assertive of you. What else will you assertively take?
I love it. We do have to have a cultural conversation because...
Yes, well, it seems like we've all been around the globe a couple times.
I know.
Yeah, you can knock around for a few corners of the world.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I think... And travel is romantic. You know, that's... it's there's an eroticism. One of the hottest makeout sessions ever was on the train from Krakow to Warsaw. You know, because it was partly of the excitement.
Ooh,
of...
la la.
Yeah, because someone could walk in at any minute. Mm. And it was like the classic... You know, coitus interruptus, like, for a whole thing. So when you finally, like, and the other, one of the classic tricks being the retention, right, of the energy.
Right,
and
building.
Building up
right,
and peaking
right.
without the ejaculation. And then the storage. And then what's amazing about that is, yeah, by the time you do get to Warsaw and back to the... and that's the thing, you know, it's like... That, but the rocking of a train.
It is. It's
you know, well.
Very...
I think travel is you know, inhibitions are let down.
Mm-hmm.
All of this. There's anonymity in a way,
mm-hmm.
right? I mean, you're no longer in your natural daily environment, the way mm-hmm. that you feel defined in your regular life.
Yeah.
You can be
you're automatically
you
on an adventure.
Yeah, exactly.
You're a spy
you
on
give
the
yourself
train.
More
right. Strangers on a Train.
Yeah.
Yeah, what's the name of that record?
Well, yeah, Strangers
Lovage.
On a Train had an
Lovage, I know, I love them.
Isn't that a great record?
Yes.
Yeah.
I love that
yeah.
song. It's great. My darling.
How was your week? Well, so, we heard a little bit about it already.
Well, that's what
epiphany,
the main thing that I wanted to share
epiphany.
Was this freaking thing that happened to me this morning. That was
I always
amazing.
Get jealous when I hear that. But you know what? I had six orgasms during sex once.
Okay, no. But listen. But here,
there, here's take that.
Well, oh, honey. That happens every day.
Let me
in
refer
one session,
to notches
yes.
on my belt here. Yeah. Sorry.
Okay, but here's what I wanted to mention. Okay, mm-hmm. because I read this book, which you've read too, What Do Women Want? By Daniel Berkner.
Yes, love it.
Love it. Absolutely
really
freaking love it. You have to
write it down.
Everybody has
down.
To read this book.
Some dude figured it out finally.
What do women want?
It's a scientific review or analysis
right.
of.
He interviews a lot of scientists. Go ahead.
Right. So, but what they talked about was he talked about the history of the finding or whatever of the there's the clitoral orgasm and then. The G-spot, and there's been a lot of controversy over whether or not the G-spot actually exists, right?
And then
in the end, I think he says it does, right?
Yeah.
There was, but only I think it was kind of connected to like the inside of the clitoris. Anyway, so whatever.
That
but then
sounds true to my experience of it.
But hold on, okay. So then he says there's also this like mythical cervical orgasm.
Oh yes.
And
oh.
it's literally like this myth that nobody knows if it exists. Like some people kind of report it, but do you really
actually,
know what they're talking about? And
a
blah, blah,
lover
blah.
Of mine said that he has provided this sort of orgasm for a woman, and he said that he actually can feel something that almost feels like it gets hard in a way.
So
like,
here's my experience lately. This is This is new.
I haven't had it. I haven't.
Well, this is what I think it was because okay. But here's okay. So let's just get very intimate for
yes,
a little
yes.
bit. So lately in my sexual experiences, there's one lover in particular that, for whatever reason, the way we fit or whatnot, like, and he, it's like that too. He feels something in me where he always wants to go really deep, which is usually very uncomfortable
right,
for me
if it's the wrong fit.
Right, but. I feel like I've been like opening in a way to this. And so anyway, this morning, the fantasy that was coming to mind was, it's like something that my body was craving was this super, super deep experience. So I was just really like, literally it was, I've never had a fantasy like this ever either. It was like very super, almost tantric, like connected, like hardly any movement. And all I was wanting was just depth, like, super deep, super deep, super deep. That's all my mind was going for. And then I had this like freaking explosion. So I'm wondering if I had the mythical cervical orgasm without penetration magically.
Well, you know what this makes me – no, but you know what this also makes me think of is the power of your imagination and your brain.
How much of it is in your head.
Yes. How much of it is imagination, which I think Daniel Bergner also talks about. Or Sex at Dawn does. I mean, it's in all kinds of sex books, which is the synapses firing in your brain. I mean, it's all tied together.
And I do have – I orgasm – like I have multiple orgasms with my close partners. And so it's like I do orgasm –
right.
Frequently and regularly,
right,
but this
kinds.
Was different.
Yeah, no, different sensation.
Well, which nerve cluster in the body we're talking about? I think I'll never forget looking at the poster in neurobiology class, and it's like they had that classic, the brain stem, and it was cut off. And I was like, that's just the top of the antenna. We've found now that the heart, the cardiac muscle tissue, is more than a pump. It turns out to be a central chemical processor of every emotion in your blood. And that cardiac muscle tissue is more like, you know, neurons, there's neurotransmission in there too. So that electrical pulse that's on a sort of porous between the brain and the heart, that's your central, and the poets and the mystics have known this all
along.
Right,
they always talk about it.
And then there's the gut, right? The cluster in the gut.
Right.
And then now there's your cluster down there and where your witch bulbs go where, like, hey, maybe it's a little bit different on everybody. But what, and I think in the highest states of meditation, whether you start at the top or start from the bottom, it's the whole system that goes off.
Right. Yeah. Well, I was going to say, so for me, I've had this, it's, well, now it's a regular thing, but how sensitive my scalp becomes, like after an orgasm or during an orgasm. And it's sort of just what we're talking about with like different sensations. I mean, your whole body just sort of becomes this on.
But the antenna at the top, the hair is important. I'll never forget the hair pulling thing.
Right.
That's one of those classic things, because especially if you're taught to be too well-mannered, you're not kind of more bonobo than chimpanzee, you know what I mean? It's all good, but sometimes a little rough play is part of the fun.
Well, I love and Sex at Dawn, by the way.
I haven't.
Have you read Sex at Dawn? Talks about the bonobos and the chimpanzees.
Yeah, okay, so that's why I'm here, because it's
in a much more technical way.
Well, it was some cats at NASA who we have the things who brought this up to me. It's one of these things that's been bouncing around the scientific circles talking about this a lot recently.
Yeah.
And because it speaks to something really deep in us, but and I'll never forget, because actually she was quite an intellectual powerhouse, and the thing was she never forget, pull my hair. No, harder. And I was like, oh, I don't know if I'm okay with this. Like I'm like, according to all the books, I am not supposed to be doing this. Right. And it's probably some laws. but that's the thing, is that it's like, okay, so.
But I wonder.
There's a boundary to push.
Technique too with the pulling. Just yanking. I'm always like, grab the hair, and they have this panic moment. I'm like, I'll grab your hair, and you're like, no, not at like the side of my head, like yanking my ear over, and then I go no, and then grab on the right, my head's being yanked around.
You wrap it up in a bunch.
Yeah, who are these men?
For me, it's actually like it rub the scalp, right?
Yeah.
So rub all around.
And fingernails.
Use the net, and massage.
You guys,
it.
We have to organize. We could have a whole talk over like.
Oh, you feel like
physical
we're just,
body.
Yeah, we're just playing.
We're initiating pushing boundaries here.
Okay.
And in the history of initiations,
we're going to touch on all topics.
Tantric enlightenment. Like, by the way, ladies
just
and gentlemen,
like the body, it's hard to break apart specific parts.
I had to share that.
That's another thing about spiritual experience.
I'm just saying.
And the mystical experience often comes with. And this is William James. This is freaking the. This is the Department of Psychology at Hartford, everybody. I'm just saying, like, it's, I'm not coming from any one particular religious perspective. This is something that's in the psychological study of the religious experience. One component of the mystical experience is you got to go tell it on a mountain. And I've seen that that's what a lot of what's motivating.
I'm on my mountain.
Yes, yeah, we are go on the mountain.
Climb that mountain.
Mountain woman.
Yeah.
I am the mountain woman. That does not sound sexy.
All right, so finish your thoughts, right. Z-Man.
They're never right. finished. You're here. I know. You're the antennas. My main thing is just to be a good gentleman and listen to the ladies. Hold forth.
Right, and okay, don't pull from the side of the hair.
Yes, right.
I would
side of the
so
head.
You,
actually,
like,
dovetailing.
A little action.
Yeah. Dovetailing on the whole back to the monkey thing. Yeah. I didn't finish Sex at Dawn yet, but
it's a great book.
It is fantastic.
I'd like to recommend everyone too.
Yeah.
Called Sex at Dawn.
Right.
Which we're working on our blog, but we'll put these
books
up.
We'll put all of these
well.
Up so you can see. But we'll talk about this more in detail, but there's basically the bonobos and the chimps, right? And the chimps are more aggressive and they're just whatever, more aggressive and selfish, and then the bonobos are more communal. In a sense. So I'm wondering, though, if different cultures and different family lines and our bloodlines descended perhaps from, like, maybe there's just bonobo people and there's just chimpanzee people. Like
more pure forms of it.
But right.
It
seems like I wonder, like, if
humans
some...
humans have both.
Like it's
I'm sure, but I wonder if it's like, well,
no,
maybe
sure.
it's just that I have more bonobo blood or whatever
sure.
in me. And, like,
it makes me think of this
some
article.
People have more chip blood.
My friend posted about the Akka tribe in, I don't forget which country in Africa, but it is, you know, an African community that the men and women share child care equally, like 50%, where the man will take the child. And they're talking about how they'll let the children suckle on the men's nipples to, like, as a pacifier.
Right.
And they'll just kind of tie the baby onto them the way that the women do.
No big deal.
Right, right. And I thought that was fascinating. And to me,
that is
a more bonobo
you know,
kind of
yeah.
sharing community. You know, I don't know.
I
it's an interesting idea.
More sexual variety in human societies, like, over the years, if we totally. Care to admit it. And I think that's
well,
what I'm looking for. Sex has
some great examples. Like,
from
female-driven
boundaries.
Sex communities. And no, like, where it's more of a, sorry, female-driven.
I know a place
sorry.
Like that in
well,
Massachusetts.
Well, maybe more matriarchal, huh? you know, more yeah. matriarchal societies versus the patriarch,
yeah.
you know, and
Miles,
and
yeah.
where the women have multiple male lovers and it's a given and, you know, this sort of thing.
That's America.
Well.
You know, they just don't talk about it. You know what I mean?
No.
Well, that's the
well,
thing.
Look,
is now they ain't talking about it.
Yeah,
well,
yeah. So, no, we're talking
actually,
about it. Okay, wait. I just read an interesting factoid that it said 1 in 5 women that live with their boyfriends have other sexual partners.
Really?
Yeah, I know. And I thought,
openly?
Well, you know, in Los Angeles, 1 in 5 people are in the arts industry. You know, I was like, it's a lot.
yeah.
yeah.
That's a stat.
What a coincidence.
No. Well, exactly.
That's an impressive
all.
Stat. I wonder.
I don't think it's necessarily public. I don't
right.
think that they're open about it or
yes.
that they're telling their partner. But I think it does speak about to what women what
people,
women
right?
want.
Yeah.
Which by Daniel Bergner, that book is addressing that issue of us bringing it more to the public and to the forefront of
yeah.
Of women's open sexuality. I mean, the fact that when they watch porn of any kind, they're aroused, whereas men are much more
yes.
Binary. Like they have to if they are aroused by women, they're aroused by women. If they watch gay porn, they will immediately lose their erection,
no, they get, they,
you know, vice versa.
There's some arousal, but not full.
Right, whereas
arousal.
Women are like, woo, bring
Everything.
It on.
Yeah. But the one
like,
thing, that I,
on. That,
the one thing that I thought was the most fascinating from that experiment, but also for me, for almost the entire book, was finally, like, they did that experiment, and they also, so they were able to read with a plethysmograph, like the internal, the wetness and the whatever.
Blood flow.
And the blood flow.
To the area.
Right. And so that's how they measured physical arousal. But they also measured it consciously. So you could tap in what your response was, whether, you know, how aroused you were or if you were aroused. And the men were like one for one. They were, everything was transparent. What they verbally said corresponded with what their body was saying. But women,
oh, yeah.
it was the opposite.
It took yeah. me years
what
to
their
that.
Body said was completely opposite most of the time with what their mind said, which to me, and he, it,
no,
there's no,
guys,
come,
look, wait,
hold on a second.
That all
hold
along.
On a second,
no,
but
on.
Let's look at this
okay.
because I mean, okay, I think it's good to acknowledge this, but I also think that it just there's no answer exactly as to why this is the case, but
I think
it
I
just
know
points
why.
To a strong correlation that women perhaps have way, way more cultural imprinting about exactly. what is okay and what is not okay.
Women
and
are for men, grilled into them.
Yeah, what's and for okay men, okay. what you want is okay.
Women like, respond
I would like to, rattle
grilling.
Off some stats.
Men just shake it off.
You know, true. Can I talk about like domestic true. Violence here in the U.S., right? It's like the number one death rate of a pregnant person is their spouse killing them. You know, this is in the U.S. There is, you know, yeah, sexual ideas of, I think 1 in 3 women are raped. Like, there's all these crazy stats. Like,
oh, yeah.
there is serious violence against women in this country. There is serious, also
so
on a larger
assert,
scale,
okay.
politics. Like, there are less women in politics in this country than, like, in Pakistan. You know what I mean? Like, weird ass.
Hard numbers to get.
But
hard
not,
numbers to really ascertain. You know what I mean? Like, we don't really know what's going on there. And that's what I'm looking for. Go with your
no,
thought.
I'm talking about just literally saying, in a political, like,
yes,
what I'm
but
saying
that's
is
more
that
external.
I think American
this
culture.
This is more internal.
Yes, but yeah, no, but what they were saying in this. Yeah, I think the study was just pointing to the fact that women don't feel like they're in a safe community where they can express what's really arousing them.
Well, that's a really
and so they're pressing the no button.
True.
Yet the plethysmograph
true.
Is able to detect that they are indeed
they're
aroused.
They're saying no, but they mean yes, or like,
yeah.
on some deep level.
I mean, now that I'm in a more open place, I'll tell people a lot more that I'm aroused by many more things than
right.
I would have 5 years ago.
Yeah. Sure.
You know, 5 years ago, I'd been like, no, I'm not turned on by that.
But
I don't want that.
Yeah.
This is you guys pushing boundaries, and that's what I love about you.
Thank
is that,
you.
Is that whether you're citing statistics, let's get that statistician in here and like see what kind of underwear they're wearing. And you know what I mean? And then whether it's politics or some historian, if it's a scientist we want to get, I don't want to, like, it'd be wonderful to hear from the science and the medical people, but I think we were talking earlier, they medicalize sex a lot. I would also like to get artists and musicians in here who maybe also have a lot more field experience with the subject.
No, I love field experience.
Yeah.
Well, that's
I'm big on field
I value field experience most because, like, you can read experts and all this stuff, but what
you know
it boils
what
down to
about?
Is your own experience.
When I first started having sex, I remember thinking, this is so weird and not like anything I discussed with my friends, like the actual way that it went down.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And I'm going,
yeah.
How did this not get expressed? How did my friends or family not convey this? You know? And so I think about, whatever, the way that you learn about sex early on.
Well, not
just
by Anglos.
Oh, but what I meant was field experience. I mean, just what you're talking about with this mystical, you know, cervical orgasm. Well, does it exist or doesn't it? Why do I need a scientist to tell me if it's true or not? If I have a friend that says she did it, I'm going to go home and then start experimenting and trying to find it on my own.
Right on. Now we know what you're doing tonight.
Get a volunteer.
Visiting my lover.
Yeah. That's what
the lover that says he's felt it. He's felt the difference when he's made women orgasm.
That way. Wow.
Well,
yeah.
From the contract, like the Kegel contraction?
Yeah, but he said that he actually felt almost like, I don't, you know.
I can feel.
You can feel the cervix.
Yeah.
Right.
When you hit it, but most of the time you get a big no.
Yeah, but he said he feels something almost become
right.
harder. Like it almost
it's,
like
yeah,
hardening
it, that's the sensation of it is it's
but
it's,
during, it, but and the woman orgasms at that moment when he feels it.
Well, but the thing is, I think that may
that's
be the case with, you can always feel the cervix if you're in that deep. And what happens is most of the time that's like too much. And
right.
it's like experienced as painful just often because the input is overwhelming. And I think what's happened is if you are – maybe your tantra's on point and you are like ready for that
well,
kind of thing.
Yeah.
Or you're just like more born a little more relaxed
well,
in that area.
I'll share with
pow,
you.
Pow, yeah. Mm.
Well, but – okay, because I think – and okay, so I think it's just my work and my approach to what I've been doing the past 4 years and with, you know – the sensual industry.
Sure.
My whole goal has been almost like a spiritual thing, like really opening, like it just happened accidentally. And mm-hmm. and this work really, like literally forced me to step into my power in a new way because like my life depended on it. Like if I walk into that room and I am not totally confident and totally on point, I could send the wrong vibe to someone and
like
and get myself into a bad situation.
Yeah.
So literally my life depended on
you know?
Being in my power. So it's really started a huge transformation, which is why this work has been so amazing. So I think it's just been this gradual opening. But my experience last night or this morning was – it was like – because usually it is painful, you know, when someone's in that deep. And comparing when it's painful to what I experienced this morning, it's just – it is an opening. It is like – like a relaxation into yourself and I think a comfort within yourself and where you're not like You're not resisting. There's no resistance on any level.
On a simpler level, like, it reminds me of
an emotional level, intellectual level.
Reminds me of using a tampon for the first time. No, but really, you have to relax. And I thought about how I had this conversation with a bunch of girls at a wedding, you know, all the women together. And it was like, you know, your mother or your friends are telling you to relax your muscles, and you're like, I'm trying to relax. Like, what the hell are you talking about? Yeah, you don't even know what they're talking about.
Just don't think about it, honey. What do you mean? Don't think about it.
And they're telling you to relax your muscles there, and you're like, relax what?
That's all yoga.
You don't even have control over them at this point.
The mula bandha is what it's called.
So the more, moral of the story is, the more sex you have, the more you'll figure it out.
No, it's not about to me.
I'm kidding. It's more detailed than that.
For me, it's more like. It's more because I meditate and I am this very internal person. So for me, it's more about internal shift and so it's inside out. And I think, but everyone's different. And then you can go outside in.
But I think everything's like that. I mean, it can happen both ways. Sure. So you have your enlightenment. I mean, there are guides and teachers that help you find it. There's your own meditation and being aware of your personal experiences and your environment. You know, I mean, all these things help you get more centered. And I think that, I mean, this is true in many aspects of your life, right? Yeah. But so sex is, you know, I always find sex is a good barometer for how it's ticking.
Yeah, they say in Zen there's sudden enlightenment and gradual enlightenment, right? Sudden enlightenment, you have these experiences, and that might be from, you know, wilderness exposure or a powerful dream or sleep deprivation or, you know, near-death experience or the powerful drug experience from a sacred medicine. There's all kinds of ways that those doors open and those experiences become available to us. But it's about your receptivity. And then the question of your gradual enlightenment is, how much of that do you put into your daily practice? Life, how much do you let it change you? Do you let it freak you out and destabilize you? Or do you let it, you know, inform you and realize, oh, maybe for me it was just like, oh, maybe all that Chinese medicine and Ayurveda, maybe that isn't such silly, superstitious nonsense as I was taught in school. Maybe there is something to that subtle body. Mm-hmm. Maybe there is something about, you know, the body we don't understand, or, you know, because I knew enough about science to know we didn't know as much as we thought we knew. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing, is that experiment, that's the pure spirit, you know, of like you don't know what spiritual experience is until you have it. You know, and I think that's wonderful that you have this venue to experience things from. Mm-hmm.
Is it too much to change gears and mention this Duke University porn star?
Do it.
That's kind of
on point.
Money.
Kind of on point. I had to check her out after we talked about it.
I mentioned this girl.
Yeah, she's a Duke girl. I mean, I was looking at
she's
Duke.
Cute.
Yeah,
she looks great.
She's cute.
You know, but again,
all right. So let's explain to the audience. So look up Duke University's this
Bell
porn
Knox.
Star Bell Knox came out publicly because a fellow student, classmate, had discovered her online and was like, oh my God, you're a porn star, said that he wouldn't tell anyone, but then he did. And then the whole community around her tried to kind of slut shame her.
It was a slut shaming feeding
slut-shame
frenzy.
Her.
Yeah, it was,
and attack her on Twitter, and you know, say violent things and that they're going to do to her if they saw her on campus. I mean,
and then she's like, "Well, if Duke could throw me financial aid, this wouldn't be an issue, right?"
No, she didn't.
No, she
did
not.
She said it in
she did.
It came back when what she in her article there was. She mentioned it in the article.
But if, I don't remember that
article. I thought her article, me either. I thought her article was really intelligent.
No, I loved it. And I thought that was a really relevant point.
Right.
You know? But, and that, you know, in a way, it was a lot of the stuff you were talking about. Is she did her the fact she's a women's studies major? You know, real fascinating details there.
For sure,
it is. She seems to really have an awareness and enlightenment about her choices and why she's doing it.
Or at least she's had to realize what the attention has put the focus where she's had to figure that out.
Mm.
I know it's going to be an amazing life experience for her that will guide her in some really interesting directions.
Well, it seems like she's rising to the challenge in a positive way, which is great. I think is better for everyone. I mean. Her freedom and not comfort, but her willingness to talk so openly about her experience and her entitlement to make those choices.
Well, yeah, but you know what? I feel like, and this is why I'm here talking openly about my experiences, and I've got these other projects that are working on this as well, because I feel like we're on the verge of like some kind of revolution in several different ways with polyamory. And with this, I think there's more and more girls in the industry sort of speaking out and whatever. And the client list is like on, I mean,
well,
it's
a popular mainstream show.
It's a popular, okay. It's totally fantasy based and it's absolute Shiza. Sorry, anyone who is involved in producing that.
It's definitely not getting, I think, to the core.
But it is, it's totally fantasy based on, like, you know, finding your one true love and, you know.
Yeah, but isn't it interesting how romance comes in as a story there?
Yeah, so, of course.
Where,
I mean, romance sells.
Where were you going with that?
But my point is that I feel like there's a lot of women who commented, or people, but a lot of women who were like, it's just such a shame that she has to degrade herself this way and she has to, you know, do something that's so base or so disrespecting herself.
Right.
And she's, you know, and which I understand why people would think that. And I think if I, like, a younger version of me might have been on that side of the fence.
Right. The younger version of me was on that side in the sense that I was very
But it's just judgment.
Well, no, I agree, but my issues came more from the issue of, like, the only, like, one of the few jobs where women make more than men is in the porn industry. Is that so? Again, this constantly commodifying the body and women only being able to exist in this lens, and, you know, I know, and that's the old me, but I think that it's, anyway, go ahead. The
fact my
that
thing
she makes the comment about people consuming porn, and it's like the number of people watching porn, and then you're going to turn to me and say, how am I doing, you know, you're criticizing me doing this.
When you're probably at home watching it.
Yeah. Right, you're watching
totally.
It. So what's the difference between being on the other side of the glass?
I agree. My feeling and my sense about this is that I feel like this kind of work honestly, it scared me a bit. Like, when I was on that other side of the fence, when I saw women who were sexually powerful or, you know, would see movies about hookers or courtesans or whatever, or porn industry or whatever, like, I was, like, afraid on a deeper level, probably not conscious at that time, and so I would judge. And in hindsight, but I was also deeply fascinated on a very underbelly level, which is probably why I'm here today. But I feel like on a big, big, big level, it's really about really embracing our own, as a woman, your own sexual power. And I think when you have someone like her, like the Duke girl.
Bell Knox,
like putting this in front of your face, it's forcing every woman to see where they are not sexually powerful or embracing their sexual aspects of themselves. And that's a scary thing to see. We don't want to see what we're not seeing about ourselves in the mirror. And I feel like that's where the judgment and that's where the naysaying comes in from the women's side. But and I say that from my own experience because that's what was happening from me on my end, and that's what was making me feel that way.
Right, no, I think there's a lot of truth in that.
So it's just a challenge. Like, I challenge those naysaying women, and if you feel those feelings yourself, to really examine, like, what is really freaking me out about this? Like, why do I care, you know, what this girl is doing?
I wanted to bring up, so I mentioned this to you as well, so that Lars von Trier's film, The Nymphomaniac, that's coming out. It's a lot of celebrity big names. I think Uma Thurman, for example, and then Shia LaBeouf stars in it, and Charlotte Gainsbourg, all these other people. And what was fascinating in the article that I was skimming about it was okay, great, it's all sex, and there's tons of sex, and it's about this woman kind of chronicling her sex history and through flashbacks. And ultimately, in the article, it mentions, well, the actors never really did any of the sex. And we would, yes, we were always naked on set and all that, and we got used to seeing each other. But then we used porn stars and CGI, like, extract their sexual organs to, like, put them on theirs.
Basically, spent a lot of money.
Yeah, a lot of money.
To
and made some poor editors
as
non-relations.
Yeah, and so then I wondered, what is this? How are we defining the role of actors where they can't actually perform a sex act because then they're crossing a line because they're only supposed to
be. And then they won't get hired.
Theoretically,
and then they have to worry about their reputation.
Yeah, and they're
and
theoretically
blah, blah, blah.
Experimenting with the ideas of sexuality, but they're not actually executing it with their bodies. It was very interesting. And then I thought of the film, you know, The Blue is the Warmest Color. There was a lot of nudity in that as well. And I think there was a lot of sexual contact where they did do it. But at the same – I mean, I laughed because there's that scene where they're going down on each other. I was like, oh, her face isn't wet. They didn't actually do it.
Details.
like 10 minutes details, of, like, rubbing her face there. I know. No, but I'm just saying. So it's an interesting, weird psychological block that's happening.
Well, you know, I get it. I mean, here's the thing. If you don't want to – you don't – as a director, filmmaker, whatever, I can imagine that you don't want to put your actors in awkward situations. Like, if there's this person here that you really don't want to have sex with and you don't connect on that level, then, like, don't do that. But
There was a lot of talk about Monster Ball. I mean, allegedly they did actually have sex.
Well, that's great. I feel like give them the option.
Right.
If they connect.
Well, that's,
but,
yeah.
But why is but it? But in, what I find fascinating is how much people like to talk about it. Like, did it really happen or didn't it? Did it really happen or didn't it?
Well, that's and then if like it did, school. Well, let's judge the hell out of them.
Like, slut shame.
The slut sell newspapers and movie tickets.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's what obscene meant. Obscene meant out of the scene. It didn't take place in the scene. So that's why, you know, where are these words?
Yeah, now
what does it mean, obscene?
I mean,
it didn't happen in the scene. It shouldn't be depicted on stage in the Greek theater.
Shouldn't.
Or was. Shouldn't. It was not. Yeah, shall not. I mean, that's an English thing we do. But that, you know, that's, you know, that,
I think it's just sad that they would be so concerned about, I guess, what the industry and their fan base and whatever, that it just is sad to me that that's the state of the world.
That's what I mean. Like,
we
how
live
much
in.
Money was spent to like superimpose, and then
yeah,
why,
like
and
how much effort, like
okay
just
for the porn stars to fuck. Like this is
right.
Do you know what I'm saying? Like
right.
This weird line of like, well, we brought in the professional sex people,
right?
Like, our organs are just for looking at.
It's a class. It's right. I mean,
yeah,
it's classes.
Like a class
it's totally
it is
classes.
It is a class distinction. That's what I felt when I.
Oh, I mean, it has been. It's always you know. It's,
yeah. So
well, other
working
than the courtesans,
class, San Fernando, like of the.
Yeah, it's like their genitals, and then we can.
Well, there was the because the Greeks had the several classes of you know there is what's interesting is that it's very class based from
since the Inquisition basically it's been
back to the Greeks even
oh really
but
I thought it was I thought it was
Wikipedia this right now if you want all the different classes of classical like. Classical prostitution. It was one
what,
of the
oh,
things
classes,
of like.
What do you mean?
No, 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 no. I'm talking about like sexually speaking, like prostitutes and sex workers being at the bottom of the barrel. Other than
right. When
you've
did
got
it flip to
right, like you've got the courtesans
revolution.
And these women
right,
who
right.
are all on top, and then the Inquisition and religion.
Well, can I say,
but you're saying it goes back to
it bounces up and down. You know, like
Set Dawn talks a lot about this, which is like. And I always kind of reference it as well, this idea of like industrial revolution, the also ownership of property. I feel like when you had ownership of property in society, there
yes.
ended up being a big flip in power dynamics.
Way before the industrial revolution.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. That's why I was like,
when,
okay, ownership
when,
of property.
When boundaries came into place.
Right, because then you had power and money and
Well, then paternity became an issue.
Right.
It's because you're building your own unit.
Yep.
God damn it. And mine's going to be bigger than yours.
And it costs this much. You know, and you now have a
and my food
coin
is my food.
It.
And
it,
so we came
right,
out
so
of a communal.
You wanted to know whose children were yours.
Yeah. So it became this competitive, horrible
Well, right.
thing.
And then female sexuality needed to be harnessed.
Right. Exactly. And that's why, yes,
this
and
massive
chains
free.
Of marriage.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, no, but also the puritanical mindsets of like – you know, clothe yourself. And I mean, Sex at Dawn talks about sperm production and the size of balls, of men's balls, and like overhead
how
history.
They've shrunk.
Yes, what? And they're shrinking. And
oh, guys, do you hear that?
And less sperm production because, and he's saying that it's, you know, probably from monogamy and the way that we are training and sort of.
That makes sense.
Yeah, the same way
that
you.
Totally makes sense. If you don't use it, you lose it.
Well, the same way
they
that
must
you
have been
train
using it a
horses
lot,
on a farm or something, you're training. We're training our bodies and saying, okay, you are meant to be monogamous, which I don't think is necessarily natural. I'm not saying that it's that there aren't naturally monogamous people as well. I think
sure.
there's a range, and I think that we are
too,
hard driving towards
right.
one track.
I'm just saying, let's question it. Like, well, let's instead of just automatically funneling ourselves. Save the ball.
How'd you guys get started with the pushing boundaries conversation? Where did the first like, you know, serious talk happen between you
I
two?
Know.
Where you realized?
I remember.
Yeah,
I remember the day.
Okay.
It was at the Catalina Film Festival on the beach. Do you remember that day?
Okay. Yeah, we did. Yeah, we did have an intense conversation.
I thought probably earlier.
We've always talked about it, and we're consistently talking about it around the clock.
But we always have these. That's why it's like, oh, we should do something with this. But so how do we? So I think that's the first time we like seeded and planted an idea to do something, like to write something or to whatever.
Express ourselves more.
And
fully.
That was in 2012.
Mm.
Yeah,
that was a big year.
Yeah. Yeah.
So and that I was the first thing.
Not that, anyway, yes, we have our unique field experience, but we also do, just our fascination and interest in it and wanting to really engage the community.
Well, now that we're wrapping
up, talk more about that.
We're approaching the end. Why don't you guys introduce with Pushing Boundaries, we're going in this direction with the show. Tell the audience a little bit more about yourselves, introduce TNA, and so that we can leave them with like your guys' unique experience in the field, and they can look forward to hearing more from you next week as we bring the experts into the studio, from the, you know, working hands in the field to the high-minded science types.
All the philosophers and everyone the workers in across the board.
Yeah. And the lovers and the haters.
And the poets.
You know what I love about this? Can I just say, what I love about our this discussion is it's almost like anyone is game, because we were talking with
everyone has experience. Everybody has perspective and opinion.
Our photographer that we – exactly. I love that.
We can't fail here, guys.
You're pushing my boundaries.
Golden egg.
Right. That's why last week you pushed my boundaries. Right. I loved it.
Amazing. Well, I was going to say the minute we mention the show to someone, they immediately start sharing their sexual experiences or their quandaries and it's beautiful. And I just thought, great. Like, if you have something to share, you know, we want to talk to you.
Yeah. So, yeah. And, okay. So for me, I'm A. And
she has a bodacious ass.
And it's fantastic.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Bodacious ass.
Thank you. My clients have, said it's the world's greatest bum. I think it's a highly subjective matter, and I prefer other bums, but I'm not going to complain.
You have a very nice one.
Thank
classical
you.
Proportion. I mean, that is a mathematical curve.
Mathematical
curve. But I've seen, you know, different shaped ones as well that are equally titillating.
Yes. Okay.
Sure. But that's a monument.
It's in a class. Yeah. It's in a high, it's speaking of classes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Very high class.
Moving on. So I have a high class bum.
It is, yeah. It's
that's
in
great.
The class of,
yes.
I have more than just a bum, really.
Uh-huh. Yeah. We have this talking
mouth. But if
mouth,
you started
so.
There and you started, work your way up, okay. It gets better.
So I've been working, I don't know what I call myself, in the sensual industry for the last 4 years. And it started, it started because I had decided, it was just a lot of things came into play, but I wanted to change my life. I knew. I also wanted to get into some creative projects that were happening, and I needed money to go into Russia to participate in them. And then I got back in touch with a girlfriend who was doing very well and like funding all these projects. And I'm like, what are you doing? And so, and she told me, and I was like freaking fascinated, and because I've always been drawn to like my favorite movie growing up was Dangerous Beauty, which was about Veronica Franco. So that tells you everything,
sure.
I suppose. But
These are popular, like Belle du Jour that I mentioned. I mean,
sure.
They're popular films in society.
So that's kind of, I got rid of everything. I got rid of my businesses. I was doing business at the time and my relationship and everything. And I went and I made money and did the projects in Russia and stuff like that. But so that's what got me going. But then
you didn't do the work in Russia. You're doing the work here.
I was doing the work here. Yes,
you didn't get to go to Russia.
I did.
Okay.
I did. And then
for
I came back
reasons, yeah.
For different reasons. Not for sensual work. No, for other reasons. And that's kind of what got me into it. But I freaking loved it. I'm well educated. I'm college educated. I've been a business owner. I've done things in life, but like this has been the most rewarding work of my life. Like it's been wonderful, and it's not something that I think every woman, it's not right for every woman. You have to and I just don't want people to say, oh yes, it's a fantasy fairy tale thing. And of course there's a dark side to everything, but which is why you have to be careful about going into it and not, you know how to not attract the darkness, but
in any job, and it's
in any
real
that's going to happen
too.
In yeah. any job, yeah. I know. But I'm here because I want to talk about my experience, which has been really beautiful, really, really beautiful. And I kind of want to dispel. I think every experience you read about, or every movie or whatever about this sex industry is always like,
it.
Yeah, and it's this woman who's compromising herself and who like wants to be doing something else. And there's so many amazing girls out there doing really amazing,
valuable work
with men.
Yeah. We're working on that. We're telling that story.
Well, there is. There's a one out called American Courtesans. It came out last year.
Great. And you approve it. You liked it.
I just found out about it yesterday.
Oh, you haven't watched it.
Okay. Not yet.
There's a lot of material out there. But I like what you're saying.
So
I am.
Yeah. So go ahead.
Yeah.
What about you, baby?
I'm T. I have breasts.
She has more than breasts.
I think they're fabulous. I get a lot of compliments.
You do
on my
have
bum
fabulous
as well,
breasts. It's one of the first comments I said to you. I think.
Did you?
I think.
Oh, thank you. That's nice. Okay, so I a good number of you, I guess it was also maybe 4 years ago that I had my first experience with outside of my relationship with another man, you know, while I was living with my partner. And honestly, I didn't handle it perfectly. I think I had an interest in it, and I started, I had always sort of in the back of my head been curious about open relationships, or the term had come across me a couple times. And then in conversation with a girl in a class, she said, "Oh, I'm in an open marriage." And she recommended a book to me. So then I bought the book, and I actually hid the book. I would read it when, you know, my boyfriend wasn't home, and all these ideas are like racing through my head. And then my boyfriend went out of town. I had an experience. I didn't, you know, anyway. So we ended up talking about it, and then I brought the book out, and it went from there. And anyway, since then, you know, I think it actually expanded our relationship and allowed us to speak more honestly in a lot of ways, and go deeper in what does a relationship mean to us. And I think being forced to ask those questions rather than just taking the cultural assumptions or norms for them, without asking them for yourself,
it's brave.
Yeah, has been really eye-opening and insightful.
And I've been along for some of the ride with you, and it's been really fascinating. So I look forward to sharing
more about all of that. About those individual experiences.
The good, the bad, the ugly, the hard, the beautiful.
Well, and the positive.
Yes.
You know, all that has been really good about it.
Definitely.
And anyway, and also it had a history of, you know, I directed the Vagina Monologues in college, and I was always very charged about women's rights. And anyway, so I just have a lot of knowledge to share.
It's just what was meant to be.
Right, so we came together and here we are. TNA, pushing boundaries.
All right, we'll be back next week.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.